The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Welcome in to a sunny Tuesday edition of the Leach Report. Happy to have you on board for an hour of UK sports conversation that we do each day here. Coming up today, UK AD Mitch Barnhart will join us. And per usual on Tuesdays, Larry Vaught and our guest lineup each day, a service of Sleep Outfitters. You can interact via Twitter at Leach Report, email leachreport@gmail.com. You can give us a call, 877-904-1080. Couple of things. Let's get to the Wildcat news of the day. Service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. And Kentucky has picked up an in-state football commit from West Jessamine High School, Eli Cox, an offensive lineman, 6'4", 295, and a player that gives Kentucky its first in-state commitment in this next class. Fourth overall commitment to this point for Coach Stoops. And he is already has a relationship with some of the guys on the team. I think he's been a part of a group that works out that includes Drake Jackson. So Kentucky has done a nice job of identifying offensive linemen with the staff. Think of guys like Bunchy Stallings that has developed into one of the top guards in the league. Really all the guys that they've got up front. I mean, Landon Young was a five-star, but guys that didn't have that fifth star maybe, but this staff has done a nice job of identifying Eli Cox, maybe the next in that line. Baseball, big game tonight up in Bloomington, number 17 Kentucky at number 19 Indiana. It'll be on the Big Ten Network, 6 o'clock first pitch. Darren Hedrick will have the call on these UK radio network stations. Big game for Kentucky coming off the series at Tennessee in which it lost 2 out of 3. So this is a chance to get a win over a ranked team on the road. And then you have two SEC series coming up, and Kentucky's kind of put its back against the wall in terms of being able to host at the Cliff for the postseason. So big opportunity tonight to add to the resume just a little bit. The official NBA Combine invitation list has been released, 5 Wildcats on it. That ties Kentucky with Duke and Kansas for the most invitees. Next week, it will get going up in Chicago for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Kevin Knox, P.J. Washington, Jared Vanderbilt, and Hamidou Diallo. I think there's going to be some TV coverage of it on ESPN2 next week. Women's basketball, Amber Smith named assistant coach for Coach Mitchell. Lynn Dunn's role is going to change into one of being a special assistant to Coach Mitchell. And then Kyra Elzey and Nia Butts signing contract extensions for UK women's basketball. A name to watch on the recruiting front for men's basketball, a 2019 point guard. I assume it's Kira, K-I-R-A, Lewis. Name to follow. Kentucky showing some interest. He's been compared to the likes of De'Aaron Fox and John Wall, only in terms at this point of just being exceptionally fast. You don't want to hang the John Wall comparison on him beyond that at this point, but that's just a name to follow on the recruiting front that we'll track with our guys who cover that part of the game when they join us here on the show. And USA Today writer has ranked every college football team after spring practice, and he did not rank Kentucky favorably. I think we'll talk a lot about this, obviously, over the course of the summer, but what I've said to everybody is if they hit on a quarterback, if they find their quarterback, then there's a lot of other pieces that look really strong on that offensive side. And I think this could be more like a team we saw 2 years ago where Kentucky was one of the more potent offenses in the league. When you talk about all the offensive linemen that are returning, you've got Benny Snell. You've got a receiver core that could be led by Dorian Baker. You've got a strong tight end, all-ACC caliber tight end, and C.J. Conrad. So there's a lot of pieces there on the offensive side if they hit on a quarterback. And that's what needs to happen for this team, and then defensively, got a lot of guys back, even though they lost to Denzel Ware. Still, a lot of guys are back. Links to the stories that we talk about each day on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Heading to a break. Mitch Barnhart, when we return, it's the Leach Report Radio Network. I got to turn on the microphone. I turned on Mitch's mic, not mine. Welcome back into the show. Mitch Barnhart, UKAD, is with us. And Mitch wanted to get you in just at some point after the things had calmed down a little bit when you're done with the basketball committee and talk a little bit about that. And then we've had the Condoleezza Rice Commission report that came out, so we can talk about that. But first of all, we'll start with... you guys are in the hunt to get in the top, a second straight top 10 in the Director's Cup, and with a strong finish, right?
Yeah, we're sitting at 15th going into the spring championships, and we will not obviously have anything from women's golf, and that'll be the only one at this point in the spring that I would say we probably won't have a chance to score in postseason. But all those are predicated on making runs. You know, you got to make some deep runs in this thing to get to a top 10 finish, and there's a lot of teams, a lot of programs that will have really good springs, and we've got to be among that if we want to be able to do that. So proud of where we finished last year. Our program was 10th overall in the country, and that was a great step for Kentucky. To be able to remain in that conversation, our spring runs are going to have to be deep. And so I think we got a shot. We'll begin this week with men's and women's tennis. They go on the road this week. Men to Ohio State to play Virginia Tech, then Ohio State if they win, most probably. The women on the road to Northwestern, they will play Kansas State. And if they win, they play Northwestern. So important to get started well, and we'll see what happens. And then we get into the golf, and the men's golf, and some of those things.
The SEC softball tournament starts this week, too. Mm-hmm. And Coach Lawson's team is... The 10 seed in the tournament and top 20 in the country.
Yeah, yeah, we were just talking about that off the air. We're 14th in the nation in an RPI, and we're 8th in the league in the RPI. So it's we've played the hardest schedule of anyone in the league. We have the number 2 rated schedule in the country overall, and what Rachel continues to do is amazing. You know, she is doing it with a freshman pitcher. And a transfer pitcher, and then a senior who was arguably a spot starter for us last year in Aaron Rethlake. And Aaron's been just a wonderful player for us in so many roles. She's played outfield, she's played first base, she's played pitcher, and she's been she started out as a straight hitter, and then she turned herself into a slap hitter. And so lots of little pieces, but I think they start this week with Arkansas at the SECs on Wednesday. But what Rachel does with our softball team is amazing. And so, obviously, a really, really fun time of year for us and to watch our teams compete in the championships.
And baseball's got a big game tonight. I was mentioned mm-hmm. in the Open. It's a chance to beat a ranked team on the road. And what is it going to take in terms of these last couple of weeks for baseball and then the conference tournament to have a shot to get postseason games at the Cliff?
Again, strength of schedule's been good. I mean, our strength of schedule's good. We've got to win some of those games. You know, when you get in those committee rooms, you can say, I played the schedule, but you got to go win some of those games. And so important to do that. We've got 2 series left these coming weekends. Mississippi State at home, which closes down the Cliff in terms of regular season play. We'll invite back the 1988 team for a reunion, and we've got some special guests and the Mississippi State people coming in this weekend. It'll be a special time to have the 4 coaches that have coached in the Cliff there this weekend with Coach Madison and Coach Cohen and Coach Henderson and Coach Menge. So it's going to be a fun weekend of really, really interesting things. And then we go on the road to Vandy next week. 2 really important series in terms of the baseball. And as you look to postseason play and then what you do down at Hoover, getting to Hoover and what you do down there, that will matter to this committee as you begin to try and position yourself and get yourself in that top 16 of the RPI. So really, really important. This last weekend did hurt us a little bit in terms of that. We put ourselves a little bit behind it. We got to go work to get back in a position to be able to do that. But hopefully we can. And we've played a hard schedule. This league is unforgiving, as we all know. And I think we've got the talent to do it, and we certainly have the offense to do it.
been a less than ideal spring weather-wise. How's the new baseball stadium coming?
It's coming well. I mean, it's clearly we're not on a tight timeline in terms of having to get it ready for a game like we did Kroger Field. You know, when we had the renovation to that, it was we had to be ready by a certain date. We would like to be ready when our young people come back in the fall so they can begin fall practice and get in the stadium. We've taken a lot of people through it. We're on task to do that. I think we're in a good spot. I don't want to miss that deadline if we can avoid it. We'd like to be able to move in and be substantially ready to go when those kids come back. So we're looking forward to that. It is a spectacular place. It has multiple uses in terms of the venue itself. It is going to be a remarkable place to recruit to. And so I'm excited for our baseball program. We took the parents of our current team through there. We've obviously taken recruits through there. I think people are going to be blown away by the facility itself. It's going to be a great addition to our facilities.
By the way, I mentioned the Director's Cup at the top. It is how you do in all sports in your athletics department, all the Division I schools. And Kentucky never finished in the national top 25 until 5 years ago, currently 15th, and as I said, trying to go for a second straight top 10. Let's shift gears to Condoleezza Rice Commission report that came out recently. What was your initial reaction when you scanned the specifics?
Yeah, it's significantly, there was, 50 some odd pages in the report. And so you read that, they had 6 months, and it's really, really hard in 6 months to get your arms around all the issues that you're trying to address. And so you had some people that, very much respect in our industry. That have been working in it and that have been around it. A very good friend of mine, Jeremy Foley, was involved in it. He is retired athletic director from Florida, and I've known Jeremy a long, long time. And so I respect his intelligence for college athletics and specifically college basketball. I think that there was a lot of things that they addressed. They identified the issues, I think, appropriately. The next step is how do you take the identification of, and somebody say, well, that was real easy to see all that. No, it's not as easy as you think. And so I think that there's, everyone wants to look at it through a singular lens. And they can say, well, this is the only way to look at this. No, there's not. You've got to look at it through multiple lenses. And so I think what they did was I identified different issues, and they said, what is the appropriate next steps? Well, the appropriate next steps where they are now is they've put together some groups that hopefully by the end of August will come back with some conversations about legislation and next steps in terms of the things that they've talked about. So obviously everyone, top of mind for a lot of people is the one-and-done conversations with the NBA. Top of mind conversation is transfers. Top of mind conversation as it relates to name, image, likeness, all those kinds of issues have been identified. I think there were some great thoughts and the way that they framed up the conversation. I think that they're going to wait and see come August what comes back to them in August. I know they will meet again in August, and then hopefully there will be something that out of that will be proposed for the next legislative cycle that would be put in October or January for the next year.
Got to get to a break. We'll continue the discussion with Mitch here in just a moment, 23 after the top of the hour. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
25 after the top of the hour, back with Mitch Barnhart from UK Athletics. We're talking about the Condoleezza Rice Commission. They tried to hit a lot of targets. It seemed like maybe it's hard to do that in a short time frame, that maybe you kind of have to pick a few more battles to fight individually and then fight that one and then move on, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's really hard. It is a large, there's lots of large issues.
Yeah.
All right. And they have far-reaching effects. What people want to look at as a basketball-specific issue. There is a lot of basketball-specific things. But the overarching piece to all of this is it has a great effect on all of college athletics. It not only affects basketball, it could have an effect on football. And then the outcrop of all of that is that it could affect the trickle down of the other sports that you have. You say, well, how is that important? You don't need to worry about them. Well, the results of whatever you do will affect the other 20 sports you have in your program in some way, shape, or form. So there's lots of moving pieces. And again, I go back to what I've said. Everyone wants to look at issues through a singular lens or get to polar positions, and you got to find life in the balance.
Is there ever a path you can see to for compensation for players, how it could work?
I think that the amateurism model is what we're trying to preserve. The amateurism model has defined a lot differently from a lot of different organizations. That people talk about the amateurism model as the college model. They've talked about the amateurism model as the Olympic model. Then they've talked about the hybrids of, you know, are athletes being compensated at through the cost of attendance, which was put in place about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. There's different ways to look at that. I think, again, I go back to what is in the best interest of college athletics in total. And you got to keep that at the forefront of your thoughts. If you don't, the things that we have grown to love, the athletes we have we've had an opportunity to bring through the world of college athletics, it changes all of that. And so we've got to be very cautious and very thoughtful, very mindful about how we proceed in terms of what that model looks like.
People will say they should use the Olympics model. The Olympics went down the road of allowing athletes to get compensation. Is there any similarities to where that could happen, or is that just two different things?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that there's, I think as you look at the Olympic model, and I think that that's been defined a lot of different ways, they've actually gotten into a spot, I think, where, you get paid for medals and rewarded for that, and there's
or like a Michael Phelps could get endorsement deals.
Correct, and there's different pieces to all of that. I think it's certainly a conversation people have raised. I think that there's going to have to be really thoughtful conversation about all of those things. You're going to, we love developing young people for the Olympics. It's interesting. If you look at the Olympics, they look at universities and colleges as places of development for our country's best athletes.
Sydney McLaughlin.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you look at that, and we have absolutely raised up a generation of athletes to go represent our country. That is the same thing. We've raised up a bunch that have competed against us internationally. We've got young people coming in from other countries that come to our universities, and they go back and compete for their country. So is the Olympic model the only answer? I don't know, Tom. I don't think it's the only answer. I don't think it's the only way. There's got to be a way that we can find our way through to preserve what we feel like is the heartbeat of the college model, and still have a conversation about how we make this thing work in total.
Coming up on A Heartbreak at the Bottom of the Hour, we'll hang with Mitch for one more segment. I've got a couple questions we'll get to about the committee, year two on the basketball committee and the quadrant system and how that works and how it worked out for them in year one with that. So we'll get into those topics when we return. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We are halfway home. Our guest lineup each day presented by Sleep Outfitters here on the show. And we'll be back with Mitch and then Larry Vaught in the second half of the Leach Report Radio Network.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
One more segment with Mitch Barnhart. You just finished up your second year on the men's basketball committee, second of five. And this was the first year of the quadrant system. Mm-hmm. How did you think that worked?
I think it was good. I think it gave more weight to where you played the games. Essentially in the old system, it was you played, a top 50 or whatever it was opponent, and then all of a sudden it was whether you're home or away. This one gave credence to whether it was home, neutral, or road, and the road and the neutral weighted a little more than the home victory. So to go win a road game gave our teams some credit for going on the road, and it encouraged people to take their schedules out and go play some of those difficult home and homes. And so I thought it was really, really good.
So if you beat the 75th best team on the road, counted for more than beating them at your place.
Correct, correct. And so I thought that was really important. And I thought the quadrant system, people adapted to it. It was amazing how quickly they adapted to it. All of a sudden, the conversation was on television with all the bracketology brackets experts was how quickly, you know, hey, they've got 9 quadrant one wins. And so the conversation went right to quadrant one, quadrant two, because there's four quadrants. And people immediately went to that conversation and said, okay, this is – and so that became the grading curve nationally about how many quadrant one, quadrant two wins you had. And on the flip of that, how many losses you had in the 3 and 4. You know, where were your bad losses, and did you have any in the room? That was a really important conversation. How many losses did you have on the back half?
Are you comfortable with how that 1 through whatever, 1 through 250, whatever those rankings, team-by-team rankings, are achieved, or is there a better way, a compilation of rating services?
So that I think what you're going to see, and we've had that conversation, is you will see a new metric that will come out. Probably in after July 1.
This year?
Yes.
Oh.
And there will be some combinations. There's about 5 or 6 different things. There's a predictive analysis, and then there's a result-driven analysis. The RPI is result-driven. Those are – there's the ones that are predictive. And they say, with all these factors, this is what – this is who should be ranked where. And so what the whole goal is to try and merge a little bit of – combine those and get to a better opportunity for us to essentially evaluate teams. And I think that we're getting to that spot where there's been some really, really smart folks that have gotten in the statistical world and trying to make sure that they're scientifically sound and that you're not putting bad information in there and creating a really bad bad dynamic.
Is there any talk about expanding again anytime soon from beyond 68?
I haven't heard that, Tom.
I haven't heard that either. As just a basketball fan, is it the right number now?
Yeah, I think so. I'm beginning to wonder if you invite, you know, 90 or 100, you know, what you've, you know, everybody wins, you know, everybody, it's hard.
It's,
you know,
always,
wherever you draw the line, someone's getting left out.
Is that
so it's, you know, it's an amazing, I think 68 is really, I think people really have been enjoyed the tournament's amazing. To be involved in it at that level is it's been an honor. You know, there are certain things you do in your career that you look back and say, man, that was very special. To be on the men's basketball committee has been incredibly special for the last 2 years. The friendships on that committee have been wonderful. The respect I have for the people on the staff that helped put on the event, remarkable. Dan Gavitt, from the NCAA perspective, his father was the commissioner of the Big East for many years, and Danny is amazing, is an amazing leader, and understands the college basketball world, is the landscape as well as anybody. So those folks that have put on it's nice to be able to walk alongside them and put on the tournament, but it's fun.
How do you think the one-and-done debate plays out in terms of how the system gets changed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that clearly the collective bargaining agreement of the NBA cannot be touched, according to what everyone's saying, until 2020. So that is a conversation. I think that there's going to be some real dialogue between college basketball and the NBA. And I don't think that's real brain surgery on anybody's part. I think we've got to get to a better spot. And I think that finding that right balance, I'm going to go back to my hybrid, my balance again, finding the balance between opportunities for young people to pursue their dreams and to be able to preserve a college model that people really, really enjoy that tournament and really, really enjoy walking through the month of March. It's become a staple in our country. And, you know, the offices shut down. You know, people don't work. And I'm not sure we're helpful for the economy at that point. But March Madness is special. It is a special deal. I'm not sure that there's anything that captures the fan bases for a period of time, and the magic and the Cinderellas and that stuff that what you had with Sister Jean and Loyola Chicago this year was a special deal. We saw it front and center down in Atlanta, and then had an opportunity to watch that go to the Final Four. So I think it's very, very special. We've got to find that balance. The one and done conversation is a really hard conversation that we've got to walk through.
Well, I know there might be one or two other things you do have to do today, so we'll let you go. But I appreciate you coming in.
Tom, good to be with you always, and go Cats.
Got to get out to a break. We'll be right back with Larry Vaught on the Leach Report.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter, at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
17 away from the top of the hour, Larry Vaught joins the program. You can read him at VaughtsViews.com and LEX18.com. And if you go to VaughtsViews, the top stories about the latest commit for Kentucky football, O-lineman from West Jessamine, Eli Cox. Tell us about him, Larry.
I think he's a player Mark Stoops very happy to get. He's 6'4", 290, 295, something like that. Tom grew up a Kentucky fan, as you might expect, in West Jessamine. Family had UK football season tickets. Got his offer less than a week ago, and didn't take him long to make his decision. He had told me originally he wanted to have his decision made by the 1st of July, but it was pretty obvious that he was a guy that was all in with Kentucky. He trains one day a week at the same facility that Drake Jackson and a few other people close to Kentucky train at. So there was a lot of reasons to think he was going to be a guy that would commit to Kentucky, and he did. Really a strong guy, good technique. I think it can certainly get better. I saw him play once last year, but a very aggressive lineman. You don't have to worry about enhancing his motor, as a coach would say. He goes hard all the time. And really, really good in the classroom. Had Princeton, Harvard, and Cornell all trying to get him to come play. So, tells you his academics aren't too shabby.
Yeah, he knows his way to the library.
Yeah. He may not even have to go to the library.
Yes, that's true, too. Obviously, great to pick up an in-state commitment, given that they haven't had any of late.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and I think maybe this could hopefully be the first of several in this recruiting class. There's, I think, already four or five really good in-state players that have committed out of state. It's still a while to December. Maybe some of that can change, and I know Eli is already talking about a couple of in-state guys he wants to start trying to help persuade, including one from fairly close to him there, Wandell Robinson at Western Hills. So hopefully this makes a difference, but it's good to get any kind of in-state commitment right now, because for whatever reason that had just kind of eluded Mark Stoops in the last couple of years, and hopefully this will be kind of the start of reversing that trend.
Go to another story that you've written about recently at the site, and you caught up to Steve Smith, a Kentuckian who's the longtime coach at Oak Hill Academy, and that means he coached Keldon Johnson most recently, and he was glowing in his praise.
He certainly was, and he really has been every time that I've talked to Steve about Keldon. I mean, going back to when he was at the Marshall County Hoop Fest, and again later in the season, talking about what a terrific leader he is and all that. But I think Steve is of the opinion that a lot of people don't really appreciate how good Keldon is on the basketball court, which, considering he was a McDonald's All-American, played in the Jordan Brand Classic, and all of that, you still think, well, he's got to be pretty good. But I think Steve thinks he's not this good. I think he thinks he's going to be an exceptional talent at Kentucky. And again, as he mentioned, he's coached players of the year and guys that have gone on to be NBA All-Stars and all of that. And he puts Keldon right there with any of them as far as how good he's going to be. And if you know Steve, you know he's not a guy to just wildly gush about players. He didn't say this about a player six times a year. I mean, he didn't have six guys on his roster, and he's saying the same thing about them every year like this. This is pretty high praise for Steve to go out and talk like this, but he's been pretty consistent on how good that he thought Keldon is. When he first committed to Kentucky, I think the first thing that Steve told me was that Kentucky's getting a steal, because he's, I think at that time, was ranked as a top 20 player, and he said he's a way, way, way better than that. I think as the season went on, we saw that. I think John Calipari is really, really going to be glad to have Keldon Johnson.
All those reports, and you were down at the McDonald's game, you can speak to this maybe, all the reports from there and other places, the one thing that the constant theme for him seems to be his competitive nature.
Yeah, he only goes one way, and that's all out all the time. And it didn't matter whether it was practice or whatever. He really got after it, and there were some guys in his class that I think that's probably not the case, and I don't know really why, because the last couple of years, even in these all-star settings, when you watch these guys, especially in the practice, they really were competitive and got after each other. As I often said, I remember watching Quaddy Green take charges in the McDonald's All-American practices, something that you just don't see. And Keldon was just kind of the same way. I mean, he really got after our R.J. Barrett when they were up there. And I think that's something that's a big plus, too, because you can teach a lot of things, but it's hard to teach effort. And Keldon Johnson has that.
Talk with Larry Vaught, and you can read him at vaughtsviews.com or lex18.com. The latter site, you've got a story about Eli Brown, and you caught up to him and some of the reasons why he decided to leave the Kentucky program.
Yeah, which helped explain a lot of things to me, Tom, because every time I had talked to Eli, he always had told me about how happy he was in Kentucky, how much he enjoyed being there and liked his teammates and everything about it. And when he made his decision to transfer, it just kind of surprised me, especially knowing that when he got his chance to play last year, he played very well. He still has 2 years left to play. But after talking to him and realizing that he brought two sisters that had been in foster care in Florida, and when they got old enough to get out of foster care, they came to Lexington to live with him, and he was basically trying to raise his sisters and provide enough money for them and taking care of them and all like that, and just decided he needed to get back to Bowling Green where he had more family that could help him in this endeavor. And it makes you kind of admire Eli for what he was doing and what he's been trying to do. And now that he's going back home, it makes it a whole lot easier to understand. And I don't know about you, but I never heard him mention that one time while he was here at Kentucky.
No.
He used it as an excuse or anything like that. He just went out and did his job and never complained. And, again, I feel kind of bad that I didn't know all this because, I mean, you got to admire a young man for trying to do this. And as he said, he was raised to believe that family ought to come first, that he's just doing what's best for his family, even if it's not necessarily maybe what's going to be best for him.
Yeah, and if you're trying to help your family, I don't think anybody can have any issue with that.
No, and again, I think it explains a lot about his transfer. And as he told me, and I'm not sure I got this in the story because there was so much I was writing with him, but I asked him, I said, well, you know, why didn't you just wait and announce your transfer after spring practice and get to go through all the benefits of still being at UK if you knew it? And he said, well, I just didn't feel right about doing that. It's just not how I felt like I should do. If I knew this is what I was going to do, I thought I owed it to go ahead and say that and do that. And again, I think that's a pretty rare thing in college athletics today now, too.
Kentucky, of course, recently lost a second guy on that second line of the defense in Denzel Ware. How do you think they go about filling that void?
I don't know. That's really a good question. I guess the good thing is Mark Stoops has got a couple months to contemplate on it now because spring practice is over. I mean, if it had happened before spring practice, I think he just would have said, well, we moved Josh Pascal there and he gets to start now and play more, and then we worry about who's going to back up. But after you move Josh to the defensive front, let him play there all spring, and it, from all I can understand, it looks like he did really well playing there. Do you decide, well, I just like to have him up there as a playmaker, and do I go a different direction? Now, myself, I really was excited when Kentucky signed Jordan Wright, and he redshirted last year, so I've really not seen him on the field yet to see what he can do. But he's a guy that I think could be a big-time playmaker, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him slide into that spot.
See, I'm with you in terms of leaving Pascal where he is. I hope they do that. I like the prospect of having him be an edge pass rusher, and I would hate to see him have to move out of that spot. And the other thing about the spot where Denzel plays, that guy, his snaps are somewhat minimized anyway because of the amount of nickel you play these days.
That's exactly right. So, again, I like the idea of Josh Pascal being on the field every play that you can get him on
mm-hmm.
the field. And,
me too.
And maybe it'll take him a little bit more time to learn, but I just think Josh is one of those guys, you put him out there and let him play, and he's going to be pretty good no matter where you do. And that's certainly a spot I think you need help. And if he plays well up front, that makes a linebacker play a whole lot easier to play anyway.
Got to get to a quick break. One more segment with Larry Vaught. When we come back, it's the Leach Report Radio Network, about 7 away from the top of the hour. More minutes with Larry Vaught on this edition of the Leach Report. I don't know if we've talked, Larry, since they picked up the transfer from Iowa, Ahmad Wagner. What would you expect out of him in year one?
Well, I was hoping he was going to be a really good inside scorer for John Calipari when I first heard about the draft. I really didn't know, Tom. That one kind of took me by surprise. But when you think about it, it's really a win-win or Mark Stoops. I mean, he has a scholarship. Why not use this as a guy that was a really good high school player that recruited him out of high school, decided he wanted to go play basketball. Now you bring him back. Hopefully he can get adjusted and get back out there and get used to football pretty quick. But a guy 6'7" that could catch the ball like what he's shown that he could in high school, I don't see any downside to it. Yeah, he may have a little bit of trouble learning the offense and this and that, but surely you can find the right plays and right situations that you can get him in there. And if it works out, man, what a steal that you brought in to add to your receivers. And if it doesn't, well, you're not out that much because you had a scholarship available and you've used it. But I really like a guy that's 6'7" that can get out there and maybe make some plays for you. He's obviously an older guy and a mature guy. He looks like he's pretty strong. So maybe this will be one of these rare instances that you just kind of did something a little bit unusual, and it just turns into a steal for you. And if not, you've still got all the other receivers that you recruited anyway. So I don't see any downside for Mark Stoops. I kind of like the creative thinking here. This is kind of something like you would have seen John Calipari do.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's, you know, I understand it's, for him to fully get immersed into the playbook and all of that will take some time, running routes, getting open, all those things again since he hadn't played football in a while. But if nothing else, it'd be nice to just throw it up to him in the back corner of the end zone when you're down there close.
That's what I'm thinking. That's a play you ought to be able to learn pretty quick,
exactly.
Don't you think?
Go run over there to that back pylon, and we'll throw it to you.
That's exactly right.
And, also, then just post up like you're going for a rebound, and we'll throw it to you.
I think me and you could coach that play for him, Tom. Just tell Mark we'll take care of that one.
Yeah, there's not a lot we could handle, but we could maybe handle that.
We could do that one. You just get him down inside the 10, Mark, and we'll throw it to Ahmad. He can make the touchdown for you.
About 30 seconds. Are you on board with what seems like the rest of the college basketball recruiting world followers that Tyrese Maxey is going to announce for Kentucky tomorrow?
It certainly seems that way. I'm still kind of anxious to see whether he reclassifies or not. I have some people tell me that they don't think he's going to, but I don't think anybody really knows.
Yeah, Ben Roberts was on with us yesterday. He said he's hearing more and more that he probably is going to stay in 2019. So maybe he'll tell us tomorrow when he makes his announcement. Larry, thank you much.
All right, Tom.
Larry Vaught, every Tuesday here on the Leach Report. You can read him at VaughtsViews.com, LEX18.com, and we will see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow The Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to